Welcome to the Western Bowhunter Podcast with your host, South Cox of Stalker State Bows.
Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast. This is South Cox, and we are in a little different setting today. So if the acoustics sound a little odd, we're in my house sitting around the dining room table because we couldn't make enough room in the office without tripping over each other. I have Jake Morris here. You've heard him on the podcast before, and we've got a couple of new guests. And the first one is I got the awe, which my wife is, browbeating me here for saying the ums and ahs. So any case, we have JV, which actually, let me start backwards a little bit here. So if you guys have been following the podcast for a while and social media, you saw that I was looking for a new employee. Oh, several months ago, I started that search and I had a number of people apply, a lot of very, talented and well, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for?
Qualified.
Qualified. There you go. Thank you, Jake. A lot of well-qualified individuals, a lot of people I would have loved to have been able to bring on board. JV, which is actually, his name's Jake Veldhaus, and I'm pronouncing your last name right.
Veldhaus. Right?
Yeah. Veldhaus, okay. Yep. So it's kind of funny. It seems like I've had two criteria in Stalker. If you're going to work for Stalker, you either have to be named Ryan or Jake. And because I've had Ryan Sampe out in Hawaii. He doesn't technically work for me, but he's helped me out immensely over the years. And then I had another Ryan that worked for me for the better part of last year, there in California, and came out here to Colorado, helped me out, some here as well. But any case, so one of the biggest trepidations there in hiring, Jake, and now we're wondering which Jake I'm talking about, was now I'm going to have two people named Jake in the office. And it's going to be not only confusing for me, but for the customers. So Jake, new Jake, is going by JV. So we'll refer to him moving forward as JV. And then we have the original Jake. So maybe it'll be old Jake and new Jake, but JV works. Is what we'll go with. So I wanted to welcome you to Colorado, JV.
And thank you.
Yeah. And I'm really stoked. I had a construction company for 18 years before this where I had up to 13 employees. So, it's exciting for me kind of growing Stalker and seeing it go from just myself to then two of us and now three of us. And it's a lot different than having my construction company because, when I had 13 employees working for me, we really didn't have any common interests. For most of the guys that worked for me, it wasn't a passion of woodworking or something like that. It was more of a, I need a job. I need a paycheck, right? And the nice thing about the three of us here at Stalker is that we all have the common passion of the outdoors, woodworking to maybe a lesser or greater degree for some of us, and then, of course, bow hunting. And that's a pretty neat common bond to start with and one that makes this job, showing up every day or the 5 days a week a lot more fun than, punching a clock. So, and I think you guys would probably, I'm assuming, would agree with that yourselves.
Absolutely.
Beats having a real job. That's what you always say.
Yeah, for sure. I did 25 years in construction and retired to play in the bow shop. So it's a lot of fun for me. And I hope that you guys, over the coming years will get the same enjoyment out of it that I do. But Jake, why don't you, JV, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your history? You're from Ohio. Is that right?
Yeah. So I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, born and raised. So I started out, I'll just give you a little bit of my hunting background. Started out hunting around 12 years old. My dad got me into it. Been mostly whitetails, lots of small game, turkey, that sort of thing, Midwest. More recently, I've gotten interested in hunting out west, mostly elk hunting. But watching south, you know, obviously I'm going to have to be getting into some mule deer hunting as well.
You won't be ostracized.
Right, right.
The freak elk hunter of the group.
Yeah, yeah. You need one in the group, right?
Right, right.
But as far as my woodworking background, I went to school for architecture. Graduated in 2013. I took a lot of furniture design classes in school and was able to kind of grow a passion there and get a little bit of experience there.
You're kind of interested in the like craftsman style, kind of green and green from some of the pictures that I've seen, and maybe some Japanese influences.
Right. George Namasaki, stuff like that. My brother and I started up our own small little company back in Ohio, doing a lot of live edge tables, things like that. And then,
and he's still back there in Ohio. You said he's a firefighter.
Yeah, he's a firefighter. So he had the benefit of working one day, being off two.
Nice.
So he got to do a lot of you know all day work sessions on our furniture and things like that, where I mostly spent evenings. But we had a lot of success with that. And then more recently, my girlfriend and I were looking into moving to Colorado. She got a job, and then I was kind of in the search for an architecture job. And came across this this just incredible opportunity to come and build bows, where I can kind of incorporate several of my passions into my job. So,
and you were like one of the few people that applied that actually had you know the computer experience that I was looking for from a CAD design standpoint, and had worked specifically with RhinoCam and so that was one of the big things that. And then also for me, a big thing too was, you know, not only, you know, that you hunt with or have hunted and do hunt with a stick bow, and are passionate about that. So to me, that, that gave me the hope that there would be some longevity because of your interest already in that field. And then not only that, but your interest in woodworking. So there's kind of a trifecta there of interest, you know, personal interest from your standpoint that really appealed to me. And that was kind of the thing that you know, put you top of the list there. And incidentally, it's pretty funny. I mean, you were like one of the first people that applied.
Had to apply right away. You know, I didn't want to miss out.
Yeah. So. And then, you know, I kind of was honest and upfront with you. It's like, hey, I like just posted this up here and I kind of want to see how things play out. And it was, like I said, it was interesting that you were like stayed there at the top of the list through the whole process there.
Yeah, it worked out pretty well. I was, you know, transitioning into a move, so didn't really have everything lined up at that point. So I needed some time to, you know, get out here anyway. So so it worked out pretty well in the end.
Yeah, it was funny because I mean, you know, I kind of put out when I started, you know, I knew at some point I was gonna have to hire, and I was dreading that one because you know, it's like, do you put an ad on Craigslist, you know, and then kind of pull from the people in the immediate area? And actually there are some guys that applied that were, you know, commuting distance from here and with some great experience and it was really hard to tell them, you know, I love what you offer, but there was just a couple of things that were niche things that were missing. And, but you know, to reach out nationwide and to, I knew somebody out there was the right person, but that right person that was willing to relocate, you know, to commuting distance to the shop here was like, man, I might be reaching here.
Yeah. Felt a little bit like a shot in the dark.
Yeah. Right. In fact, I posted it up on one of the trad forums and I got the same thing. It's like, good luck, dude. You know? And I was like, hey, I know, you know, I mean, I had a long list of things I was looking for. I knew I wasn't going to find the guy that hit every single matrix I was looking for. But it was like one of those things where if I can get as many of these boxes ticked as possible, if I have the person with, you know, a kind of computer mind, which is not me, then then they'll be able to fill in the gaps there. And even if some fall through the cracks, we'll find some help somewhere else where we can get that, all of our needs met. So,
right.
Yeah. So welcome aboard. Welcome to Colorado.
It's
pretty exciting. Like I said, now this is Thursday, day four, of your first week. So, you haven't got your feet wet for long, but, and then you just got back from film school with Grady out there in Oregon. Why don't you tell us kind of a little bit about that? I did a podcast with Grady before the film school. And so people probably have a decent idea of what was going into it, but I'd love to hear kind of your experience coming out of it.
Yeah. So South was gracious enough to send me out there to kind of learn the ropes of video and editing as well. I didn't have any real experience going into it, so I didn't know what to expect. Showing up the first day, there was 15 people already in the house sitting around chatting, you know, just way above my head. But right away, everybody was very welcoming. And when Grady showed up, you know, he really reassured us that he's going to walk us, you know, from the basics up to, you know, the experience level that we want to be at. So it turned out to be just a great experience, made some great friends, and really learned quite a bit about the video side of things and editing as well.
Yeah, that was one of the things, you know, moving forward that I'm really excited that Stalker is going to, you know, it's been on my list for a long time. Ryan Sampe is donates a ton of his time to kind of help Stalker moving forward, and he's always like calling me up and say, hey, I got this great idea. And I'm like, yeah, dude, that's a great idea. Unfortunately, I'm one guy, right? Yeah. And so a lot of his ideas have been falling through the cracks. And now we, with, you know, more manpower, we're going to have the opportunity to put a lot more of those into play. We haven't put our whiteboard up yet, but we've been talking about getting a whiteboard up with a bunch of video ideas that we'll be posting up on social media and the Stalker site, you know, a lot of specific stuff to Stalker, as well as a lot of stuff that will, you know, just be general kind of hunting information. Maybe it's, you know, showing you guys my freeze dryer and how I'm DIYing my freeze dried food, and maybe there'll be some, you know, running through the dehydrator, and then there might be, you know, we get a box of Sitka gear in, and we'll you know, do a review on our Sitka stuff that comes in, or some gold tip arrows when we get them, or a new box of broadheads, or whatever it might be of interest to people. So it won't exclusively be stuff that's related specifically to Stalker, but there will be a lot of bow testing coming up that we'll be doing. We'll start putting some force draw curves up on the website and doing, you know, speed tests with different strings, throw some silencers on there, see what that does to affect speed, you know, maybe different types of string silencers. So I've got a shooting machine, obviously we've got a chronograph. So we'll be able to give you really empirical data that's not one of these things where, yeah, I drew it back, shot it, and, you know, I was shooting 29 inches and 477 grains, and it went fast. No, there's not going to be that kind of information. You're going to be able to, you know, when we do testing, we'll have a standard of, you know, we'll build a set of 50-pound limbs. We'll test out different bow models at different lengths, same arrow weight, drawing back the same amount, you know, distance, 28 inches. We're going to, you know, shoot it through the shooting machine. So it's not going to be, you know, Joe Schmo with his finger tab and another guy testing it, shooting a glove. These will all be very scientific tests that will give you accurate information from bow to bow to bow, limb designs, et cetera. We're going to let you guys in on some development. We're going to start doing a longbow ILF limb. So we'll kind of maybe crack the door open and let you guys in on some of that testing. We're also doing a few tweaks to our ILF recurve limb right now. So we'll open open the door on that, shed some light on that one. So, you know, lots of stuff that we're going to be able to do that I just didn't have the time to be able to do before. So I'm really excited, you know, about that. And we'll get some more podcasts on here. I've been wanting to do one with Ryan Sampe and Jake Morris here. Jake's quite a tuning nut himself. And between Ryan and Jake, those guys know way more than I do about tuning a trad bow. So a lot of content coming down the pipe. In fact, I'm starting to stack up content faster than we're able to release it. So we may start doing more than one full podcast a week. So I've been doing one podcast and one McManus podcast. So we may kind of ramp it up here a little bit. We'll just have to kind of see. We still have to build bows in here somewhere too.
Got to make money somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. Indeed. Generating, podcast content and, YouTube content doesn't pay the bills, unfortunately. So, another guest I haven't brought in yet. So I had to make some promises that my editing guru, Nick, if any of this sounded bad, could cut out anything my wife said that she wasn't happy with. So I want to introduce my wife, Kyrie. If you have seen the Stalkers in the Backcountry DVD, she had a brief cameo appearance on that. So some of you guys are probably already familiar there. Little bit of social media stuff that you've seen with her, but I wanted to introduce her as well. I kind of twisted her arm into showing up here.
Yeah, and I was just sitting here thinking as Sal's talking that he said that he was the first one in this business, and that's not necessarily so. I was actually, am actually the first employee. I write on all of the bows, letter all of them.
That's true.
I was thinking how cool it is because when I put a name on a bow and then I get to meet the person that purchased the bow, then I have all these names in my head and then I get to actually meet the person. That's really cool for me to meet the client with their bow.
And she just came down to the
bow. I'm going to interrupt him. He just doesn't cut me a check is why he doesn't think of me as an employee. I think I'm going to have to start contract labor.
Right.
She's an indentured contracting servant. Out.
Yep. Yeah, well, there's a few of you individuals out there that if you look down at your bow, there's some less than beautiful writing. And those were times when my wife wasn't home and I had to letter the bow to ship. So that maybe that will gain a new appreciation for your skills there. So we just got back from Australia and did a bow show down there. And, I always feel bad that I drag my wife on these trips and not on these trips, because I mean, getting drugged to Australia is not a bad deal, but you get drugged to a bow show, you're there for 2.5 days. I'm talking, everybody's ear off. And I feel like, man, she'd rather be somewhere else. But wow, what a reception she got in Australia. And everyone down there, super friendly. And I think that she talked easily as much as I did, as far as to the customers. Everyone got a kick out of her being there.
Well, considering you lost your voice the second day, I kind of had to talk.
Yeah. It was pretty funny. I was starting to get sick coming into that trip to Australia and had like that scratchy throat, and then kind of started to morph into a cold by the time we were setting up on Friday. And then Saturday morning, I got the sniffles. And so it was kind of getting steadily worse. And I don't usually talk all day. I mean, I'm usually in the shop with my headphones on and doing a lot more listening than talking. And so, you spent all day talking to people, and it was fast and furious there, especially the first half of the day on Saturday. And people just streaming into the booth, and man, what a reception we got down there. And I really want to make sure that everyone that showed up to the show in Australia came by, said hi. And the guys that bought a bow, we really appreciate your guys' support. And it really, helped make our trip, not only from an enjoyment standpoint, but it, helped obviously pay for the trip. And we really appreciate all your guys' financial support and just the show of support of you guys actually showing up and talking to us. So, a big thank you to everyone down there in Australia, and we can't wait to get back. And I'm sure that goes for you too as well.
Well, it's hard not to fall in love with people in Australia. They're just so warm. They treat you like family. It was really great. We just really had a great time. But getting back to what Sal said about dragging me to the bow shows, it's really funny. We've been married for what, 12 years?
Mm-hmm.
The first year that we got married July 29th, the day after my birthday, which I don't know why I agreed to, but I did. So I got married July 29th. South left to go hunting. What?
The next day.
And then he's a contractor working out of the area. So for the first 4 months of my marriage,
five months
of my marriage, I never saw my husband. So my mother says to me, "What did you do?" Yeah. And I said, "I don't know what I did." Yeah. I'm not sure.
Literally. So my wife is pretty old school. So I was like, "No, we're not moving in together until we're married." So I lived about an hour drive from you. So we really only saw each other on the weekends. And
dated for 2 years.
Yeah. And dated for 2 years. So when we got married, it was, you would think that all of a sudden we're going to be spending all kinds of time together. But that was when I had my construction company going, and this was 2006. So it was before the economic crash and things were going wide open. And I had, like I said, I had 13 employees at that point in time. And I was doing a ton of work down in Sonoma County, which is about, a 4-hour drive from where we live. So the first 5 months of our marriage, I was home, aside from weekends, I was home 2 weeks during the work week, and I was gone 5 days a week for 5 months. And so it was, you know,
when he was home, he was extremely exhausted. Not much to work with there. And so I remember the day clearly when I walked in. I grew up with hunters, and he didn't put that on his, we'll talk about that later. But anyway, I grew up in the hunting with hunters. A lot of them, they left on the weekends. And so that was, I knew that was going to happen, but I didn't realize out-of-state hunters went for 10 days at a time.
Right.
And so I remember clearly one day I was in the family room and I said to my husband, well, if you keep leaving me, I'm just going to go with you. And he had his head in his hands, and he's like, no, you're not going.
I didn't think there's any way that I could drag Kyrie along on a, you know, 8-9 day trip in the backcountry where we're backpacking in and no showers and all this. I figured there's just no way that she's going to, you know, we're going to be tapping out first or second day, you know, and much to my relief, we did a trip in Nevada our first, well, 2 years in a row, well, three, was it 3 or 4 years in a row we did three. Trips to Nevada.
Three at least.
Yeah. So the first year was fantastic. I mean, we ended up we got up to, for some reason we couldn't make it in before the season started. So we literally packed in opening day, got up to base camp, dropped all our stuff by maybe like lunchtime, and we threw you know 4 days worth of food and stuff in our backpacks and went up over the top of the ridge, down the backside in the canyon, sat down at like, I think the first place we sat down to glass, and I'm glassing, you know, underneath the shade of all these trees and I'm not finding anything. And Kyrie lifts up her binoculars and goes, oh, there's a big one. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And I look down, she's looking down.
Actually, what I said was, there's a buck. And then I said, there's a really big buck.
Yeah, because especially she's used to looking at blacktails, you know, Columbia blacktails, which are not big by any stretch. And then her first mule deer she picks up is a Pope and Young class 4x4 that's bedded in the middle of the blazing sun in the sagebrush, you know, maybe 200 yards down the hill from us, which I then promptly snuck down while she was video. Oh, and then so she's going to video the hunt, right? So we get up on the mountain and I'm literally turning the video camera on, handing it to her. And this is the first time that she's seen the thing, let alone operated it. So I'm giving her some like last minute instructions, you know, and breaking all the cardinal sins of, you know, being prepared going into the mountains. But
well, good thing I videotaped the children growing up.
Yeah, there you go.
A little bit of experience.
Right. A master's in videoing kids. But, so I went down and got within 20 yards of the buck and then promptly missed him when he stood up, and just a slam dunk shot. Thing stands up broadside looking the other way and shot right between his legs. And then that's probably when you realize this was going to be a long week.
Wasn't that the hunt though that you were done in 3 days?
Yeah. Actually the first 2 years we hunted Nevada, I tagged out on the third day. And then the third year we went the duration of the trip and I couldn't shoot my way out of a wet paper bag that year.
Yeah, that was discouraging. Yeah. I thought that hunts were done in 3 days over and out.
And that was the one that we did the combination antelope and mule deer hunt. So I had you cooking in the ground blind for 3 days on that antelope hunt. I mean, it was, you know, Nevada in August and you're sitting in a ground blind 14 hours and it's, what, I don't know, 105 outside and who knows, like a convection oven inside. It was brutal. And it was a backpack antelope hunt too, which, I mean, who ever heard of a backpack antelope hunt, right? So
sounds, you know, good.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was awesome. It was really,
except for the part where you had to carry 3 days worth of gear and a double bowl with you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I had all of our stuff plus a double bowl strapped to the back of my pack, and it was miserable to say the least, the hike in. And then we got in there, we got to the top of the ridge at dark, and maybe it got dark before that. In any case, we didn't. Dave Barone, we were hiking in and going to catch up with Dave Baroneo. And he was hunting the same area that we were going to be hunting. And so he had given me some instructions, but they were, you know, it was some GPS coordinates, and I punched him into my GPS and it gave me a place like 15 miles away. So that didn't do us any good. So we peeked out the top of the ridge and we could see the light for camp, where his camp was. But as soon as we dropped down the ridge, we lost sight of where the camp was, because of the roll of the hill. So we're out there wandering around in the sagebrush, and fortunately we were able to find them. And to make a long story short, that hunt went bouncing back and forth between mule deer hunting and antelope hunting. We went the duration on that one and backpacked into two different areas for mule deer, backpacked into the spot for antelope. And I can't remember how many days in total we were hunting, but I got to hand it to you. I mean, you impressed the heck out of me from a physical fitness and toughness standpoint. There's not a lot of people that would have wanted to do something like that.
What was funny about it for me is I went with him because he kept leaving me, so I wanted to go and experience it. But then after I went the first year, I was like, I didn't say I wanted to go every year.
Right.
And then it was like, you're coming next year.
Yeah, and then we adopted kids, and that kind of
grounded.
Yeah, well, the hunts kind of went out the window as far as, you know, one of us had to be home, so. Yeah, that kind of made your participation challenging. But hopefully, you know, kind of moving forward as the kids get older, and now that we live here in Colorado and we're not having to drive so far and we have the llamas now, we'll be able to start doing that again, because it'd be really fun to get you back there. And you haven't seen the stuff that I hunt here in Colorado, and I always feel bad coming home and telling you the stories, how beautiful the country is, and you get to watch the videos and stuff, but it's not the same thing as actually being able to get out there and experience it yourself. So let's, you know, it's application season coming up here, and kind of everyone's starting to make some rough plans. Of course, it all depends on what we're going to draw. Jake, why don't you kind of chime in on what you're thinking about doing this year?
My only for sure commitment that I have a buddy that's going to come out from California and for the opening week of archery. And I told him if he's going to do that I'd hunt with him. He wants to do mule deer. And I think I don't have a hard copy of my hunter ed certificate, so I'm going to see if I can't get that squared away when I'm in California here at the beginning of next month. But I think it's going to be a little too late for the application deadline. So I'm probably going to be looking at over-the-counter units for elk and then
leftover tags. Hunter safety program here that you can enroll, because man, dude, you're going to pass up getting a bonus point for mule deer.
I know, but I have the potential move from Longmont to Estes here coming up. Uh-huh. And then, cause there was a class in Lyons, which would be an easy class for me to make, but I think it's the weekend that I'm leaving to go home. Which is kind of a bummer. It's kind of going to shut me down as far as building a point and right. Or, you know, getting in on the first round of draw for deer.
Yeah, so frustrating. I mean, 12 years working for the sheriff's department, you obviously know how to handle a gun, and then, you know,
I've been hunting since a lifetime of hunting
licenses. It's not, and the funny thing is California requires you to have a hunter safety certificate in
correct.
Order to be able to buy your license. Clearly, you've had your hunter safety certificate. And
I have a GO ID number.
Yeah.
But because at the time I took my hunter ed, it doesn't sound, in talking to the folks that I talked to at the office, I think they have an actual office that's for hunter ed certificates. Uh-huh. And
they were still chiseling it
in
stone.
Before it was all digital, there were times when whoever the instructor would teach the class and they'd fill out their certificate, hand it to you. But if they didn't have a copy that went into some hard file in Sacramento, right. Then it just doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
So I'm hoping I can go into an actual office when I'm home and see if they can't make a duplicate for me. And if not, like I said, it's going to cost me, it may just that time period may cost me the application deadline anyway, but I can hunt over the counter elk and that's not going to hurt my feelings and hopefully pick up a leftover deer tag and be in business there. Yeah. From the folks I've talked to here in Colorado, it sounds like I should at least be able to pick up a, a leftover antlerless deer tag shouldn't be an issue. Uh-huh. And then, if time permits, I'm hoping to try and get over to Nebraska sometime, after our deer season and elk season is shut down here and try and shoot a doe or two over there if I can pull that off.
Yeah. No, that's a cool thing about living here in Colorado is that, you know, I mean, there's a lot of a hunting opportunity just here in Colorado, but then you take a compass and swing it out, you know, a 200 mile radius of us. And then you have, you know, Wyoming, Nebraska, you know, Kansas to the east of us. And there's so much hunting opportunity. And then a lot of those whitetail doe tags, and you and I went down to Texas end of last year, yeah. Man, we had a ball.
That was awesome.
There. Yeah. Yep. And we came home with five deer in the cooler and we're still eating on that.
Yeah. I'm down to, I think I'm down to a couple pounds of burger and one, shoulder for a pot roast. We, you know, five people in the house goes through a lot of meat.
Yeah. We're the same way. I mean, we're thawing out deer meat for almost every meal. Yep. And I'm starting to look at the bottom of the freezer and going, oh man, you know,
it's unpleasant.
We're still 5 months away from being able to shoot at stuff. And so that's a while. Fortunately, I got on the roadkill list here in Estes and picked up a mule deer doe that smacked its head against somebody's bumper. So, that refilled the freezer temporarily again. So we got a little bit more you'll be jumping on that one. I was praying, man, the phone rang and I know the phone number for the local police department. And, so they called me and I don't know that, just for record, for illegal activities. It's just a super easy. It's, 586-4000. So when that phone number rings, I'm like, roadkill. And I'm like praying when I answer the phone, please tell me it's an elk. Please tell me it's an elk. And it's
a moose.
Right. Exactly. I talked to one dude who did get a moose.
Oh man.
And then our babysitter, her family got an elk. And I'm like, man, what up?
Exactly.
You know, where's the big game for me?
And you get some sub-adult.
Right.
Mule deer doe.
Almost makes me want to drive these roads at high speed just after dark, you know, with the big old harvester bumper on.
Yeah. Well, I think that's why California doesn't allow roadkill harvests, is they have some misconstrued idea that people are going to get some road armor bumpers and try and run animals over on purpose. Cause that seems like a high likelihood of success.
No doubt. Yeah. I'm not too proud, man. I'll tell you, it all eats the same. And it was pretty fun. I got that deer home and I had a couple of my kids here. I think Kyrie, you were in California with Carly, right?
In Arizona.
Arizona may have been. Yeah. So anyway, you weren't around and so I got to butcher the deer with the two older kids and they got to see kind of the anatomy of a deer and where their meat comes from and all that. So my daughter was in there grabbing hold of the leg. Okay, do you need me to hold the skin, Dad? I want to see the guts. Show me what the guts look like. I mean, she'd have been armpit deep if it were, you know, me not holding her back.
That's
She's
awesome.
The future hunting partner.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
The only unfortunate thing is at this age, man, she does not follow directions well. She's like, she just wants to charge ahead.
She's impulsive.
Yeah, very impulsive. She wants to pick the bow up and shoot it while you're still trying to tell her which hand to hold it in, right?
Yeah, I have to save my children from each other all the time when the bows come out. They're always, one of them will shoot an arrow. They each have three arrows, and one of them will shoot and go running for the arrow, and
the other
have to save
draw.
Them. Exactly. Exactly. It's problematic.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's Sophia all day long. Yeah, somebody's going to do the Steve Martin one of these days. Yeah. Yeah, so you're out of bonus point unless you can pull a miracle out of a hat at this point.
Pretty much.
Yeah, which Pretty sucks because, man, there's so many good places that you can hunt mule deer. And I haven't looked into the elk units that you can pull with 1 point as far as the limited entry ones. Like, we live, unfortunately, right in the middle of unit 20, which is the draw unit for elk. It's not over the counter. So I think that the B tags are even a little bit challenging. So that's an antlerless cow tag, are a little challenging to draw for a public land hunting opportunity. I think that, like, if you applied for a B, the way I understand it, if you applied for a B, private land, then those are easier to pull.
Yeah. Just in looking at the regs, it looks like they're a lot more available, but there is a B. I could be completely wrong. This is just me staring at the regs until my eyes start to cross. It looks like there's a B tag antlerless for archery that is available that is a pretty good chunk of the state, but I haven't looked at the public-private distribution in those units at all.
I think there are ample opportunities for archery B tags for antlerless cows, you know, that we just have to do a little bit of driving to get to them, unfortunately.
But, yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a boo-hoo if you lived, you know, out of state and you're whining about something like that. I mean, geez, we couldn't even get an elk tag in California.
No.
I mean, you're 10-plus points just to get an elk tag.
Yeah, and my closest hunting spot at home was an hour and a half to 2 hours from camp anyway. You know, and my favorite trailhead was probably 3.5 hours away. Mm-hmm. So,
right.
And some of those units or areas you used to hunt in the marbles are pushing 6 hours probably from home. So
the funny thing is, I mean, from a geographic perspective, when I lived in down in Santa Rosa, which is, you know, midway up the state on the coast there, it was faster for me to get there from there than it was when I lived in Humboldt, which was another 3.5 hours north of Santa Rosa.
You just went up like five to 299 or five to three or something.
Yeah, five up to Yreka and then straight across. So yeah. But in any case, I'm glad to be in Colorado now, with the problem being, you know, so much opportunity that you have to figure out what you're going to spend it on. Last year, I kind of went tag crazy, and it's like antelope tag, $30, elk tag, this much. You know, I mean, it's like they're practically giving them away. I got to buy them. So I bought everything I could. And, you know, it's like, well, maybe some, you know, I'll get a day off where I could run down the mountain and go chase antelope somewhere that I don't even know where, but I didn't end up utilizing the tag, but it all goes to support, you know, wildlife habitat and management and all that. So I didn't feel like I was wasting money. It was going to a good cause.
Yeah. You
I
know just didn't use it. Spent.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's one of these days, you know, kind of once you start to get a little more settled in here, then I'm hoping to, you know, be able to take advantage of that. What the antelope, I think, opens like the 15th of August. 15th,
I think. It's pretty early, but I think that coincides with your Nevada trip though, right?
Well, Nevada now, I mean, I was looking at Go Hunt last night and, I have a 10% chance of drawing the unit I've been hunting with 1 point. Ouch. And I mean, all the way up to like 4 points, I think it's at 4 points, I think I have a 60% chance of drawing, which sucks. I mean, I was hunting it every year there for quite a few years, and they cut back the tag numbers. And then at the same time, there was a spike in popularity, you know, in that area. And so, you know, drawing it now, it's like it might be a while before I get back there.
Yeah. Well,
which
over the counter antelope.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. I'm gonna have to find some new passions there for different critters to chase.
Yeah. As long as there's something, I'm happy.
Yeah. No doubt. So, Nevada looks like it's more than likely out for me. I have to buy a landowner tag for mule deer this year to be able to hunt in Colorado, but I'm happy to fork out the dough for that. And then I'm going to burn my, I think, 8 or maybe 9, I can't remember, elk points for Colorado this year. I'm going to cash those in and enjoy a really good elk hunt this year. So I'm pretty excited about that. I had a buddy that was going to be putting in with me. We were going to hunt together down there. And then he just found out he drew unit 1 for Arizona for elk. And he's been putting in for years there. So he's going to take the whole season and go hunt Arizona, and which then axes me out for, you know, he's not going to put in, not going to cash his points. He'll wait in till next year on that Colorado hunt. So unfortunately, that means I won't be hunting with him. He's hunted that unit before. And, so I was going to rely somewhat on his local knowledge and experience there, but I've got a good idea. I've been in the unit before, driving in there and seen tons of bulls at midday from the road. It was just nuts, man. They were bugling their heads off, and this was the opening week of the season. So I know I'm going to have a spectacular hunt. It's just, it would have been fun to just share camp with another person, but, we'll do some filming on that one and try to put something together for that hunt. Now, JV, you've got, a bunch of Utah points. You said you were going to, you're getting ready to cash in next year, right?
Right. So my dad had the foresight to get myself and my brother, started on points really young. So we're at, I think it's 14 preference points this year for, elk and deer. So this year we're going to use as a scouting trip. We're going to do the spike and cow elk hunt in that unit. And it runs, the same time frame as the limited entry bull elk. So hopefully we'll be able to get in and kind of scout the area out and get a good feel for
right
what
on.
We're going to be doing next year.
And your dad and brother are going to join you on that one?
So my brother isn't able to this year. My uncle will be going as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he's the one that kind of got me started in traditional archery. So it'll be the three of us.
Right on.
Yeah, should be a good experience. Be
fun. So does your uncle shoot a stick bow as well?
Yeah, yeah. He's using a Bear Super Kodiak. I'm trying to get him transitioned to a stalker
nice.
Now that I'm situated here. But
well, you can at least show him the light when you go out, get out there.
Yeah, maybe I'll send him a rental and let him see
there
how great they are. But
right.
Yeah, as far as Colorado goes, it kind of falls in a weird time frame where 6 months is going to put me right in the middle of the season for as far as a residency standpoint. Uh-huh. So I think I'm probably going to wait this year, get another preference point, and then if the time allows, I'll try to do a over-the-counter tag at a lower price point because $600 for an out-of-state tag is kind of ridiculous. You know, it goes towards a good cause, but
right.
It's hard when you got a tight budget.
Yep, no doubt about it. Yeah, it's when you're talking, you know, $600 and you burn – you know, if you have to write off the first couple of weeks of the season, but then you can pick that tag up for, I think it's 46 or something for a resident tag.
Yeah, yeah,
it's about a $600 difference.
Yeah,
You know,
yeah, it's significant. Yeah,
right,
no doubt. So that'll. So you gonna try to get some like an antlerless deer tag too, or?
Yeah, I think I'll probably go with both, and then just whatever the opportunity allows. You know,
if right
I
on.
Get a chance. So yeah,
good deal. Yeah. Well, that'll be pretty sweet. Hopefully, over the next few years, we meet somebody as a landowner in Unit 20 that we'd be able to get some, you know, trespass rights or permission on to go chase some cows around so we can do that kind of after work.
If anybody's listening.
Yeah.
Hello, feel free.
Hello.
We're nice. We have woodworking skills.
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yes, we can do that. Yep. Chances are, if anyone's listening, then they're probably a stick bow hunter too. So then maybe some horse tradings in the future.
Never a bad idea.
I was looking on Craigslist last year, and there was a somebody that was selling a landowner tag for Unit 20.
On private. Craigslist?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Huh? Yep. I'm quite a Craigslist lurker. In fact, I just
it's like a hobby.
Yeah. It's actually pretty fun. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff in there. And if I had as much storage space as I had in California, I would be spending a lot more money. There was a Powermatic table saw that, you know, was $2,500 new, maybe even more than that by now, that I saw on there the other day. It was like $800. It was like mint. You know, like, oh man, it killed me. But there's no way. It's like right now we're bursting at the seams. And anytime we put something new in here, something else falls out the door that that we didn't have room for the new thing to begin with. So, but in any case, I found a lady. In fact, I may have already handled this situation by the time this podcast airs, but if somebody lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico, reach out to me, send me a email, a text or whatever. I found a lady who's selling, 6 Sopris, llama packs, that are no longer made that are, no, is it 6 or is it 4? 4. For $200 a piece, and they're 800 new. So they're for 4 of them, $800 for the price of a new one. I don't necessarily need them. I've got one I could use to replace, but, the lady that I'm boarding the llamas at now, she has a string of pack llamas and a shortage of saddles. So at the very least, I'm going to hook her up and set her up with them. And then I got to talking to her and she's like, oh yeah, I got these other two as well. I'll make you a really good deal on. They're a different brand. And so she's throwing 2 more of them on the pile. And so I need, anyway, the relevance of the person in Santa Fe would be to swing by, pick these up, drop them off at a freight company that could stick them on a pallet, shrink wrap them and send them up to me. Otherwise it'll be the UPS store, which is going to cost me a few more bucks shipping them through UPS than it would be to, you know, transport them to a freight company and have them deal with it. So, That may have, like I said, have already been dealt with by the time this podcast airs, but, you know, it's a good problem to have when you find a good deal on Craigslist and your biggest problem is to try to figure out how to get it to you.
Yeah.
So it's pretty funny too with Craigslist, because if you sell anything on Craigslist, then, you get hammered by all these scammers, right? You know, somebody that says, oh yeah, I work as a marine biologist offshore and, you know, but I'm going to have my agent stop by and pay you with a certified check. And so anybody that you contact where you can't drive to their house and pick something up, you really have to sing the song and dance that you are legit and that you're not, you know, some scammer. Fortunately, I'm sure if I was trying to buy a stereo or something like that off the lady, she would have told me to pound sand. But because it's, you know, a kind of a niche community, the llama packing industry, and I'm talking to her on the phone and can talk llamas and all this and have personal experience. And, then she kind of like, I talked her off the fence of thinking I was some idiot. because once she picked up the phone, she's like, says you're from California. And I said, yeah, but I'm actually in Colorado, and I'm sure alarm bells are going off in her head. Right. But, I think it's going to work out. So she's, I should have, enough pack saddles now that, that I need a full train of llamas, you know.
That sounds like a plan.
Yeah. I may end up renting some more from the lady that I'm boarding with. Mine are kind of pint size compared to when I was bringing my llamas up and dropped them off there to pasture. It was like her llamas had given birth to mine.
She's got like a 400 pounder, right?
430 pound female. Yeah. The thing is massive. It is a giant llama. Yeah. You haven't, my wife hasn't been up there yet, but the next time we go up, you got to come up there and check them out. Super nice lady. She's like in her 70s. And there's the Leadville 100, which I think Cameron Haynes has run that race, hasn't he?
I'm not certain.
I'm pretty
sure. Is
there
a race he hasn't run?
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure he has. And it's, so it's a 100-mile race through the mountains over a bunch of 13ers. And so she has headed up the Hope, was it Hope Mountain or there's a, anyway, an aid station. So they pack 1,300 pounds of gear up to the top of this mountain with 35 pack llamas. And so she has headed that up for 33 years. She has been in charge of the pack llamas that get all the stuff up the mountain. And it sounds like a really neat setup. So they go up there, they like leave on a Thursday, they pack all the stuff up the mountain, set up like two big aid stations, and then the runners come through there and they feed them and they give them water. And then there's like a constant circuit of llamas going up and down the mountain, packing water up there for the runners. But so she just retired from that, but you know, obviously a long history in llama packing and pretty neat, you know, that to have gotten hooked up with somebody with that kind of experience. And
yeah, for sure.
So if I can help her out with, getting her some, you know, smoking deals on some llama packs, I'll be feeling like I kind of given back to the community there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and that's another thing too, is that you guys will have access to the llamas there as well. You know, if you guys do some backpack trips or whatever, you know, one of the perks of working for the company here is, access to all that and whatever resources I'm able to drum up too.
I've been singing that song to my wife. Right. Keep telling her llamas are the difference between Mountain House and like a cast iron pan and real food.
Right. Yep. And, you know, not having to pack all that stuff, you know, and grunting and sweating all the way up the mountain. I'm looking forward to this summer doing some trips with my wife and the kids and just like a summer fishing trip. And I'm going to lean on Snyder there for some of his secret intel on, you know, some of the high mountain lakes that have dumb trout that, will give the kids a chance to be able to catch them. And, Kyrie and I were going over the calendar just a few days ago and looking at it. And she's like, well, if we're going to have any family from out of town coming to visit, they have to come in this one week in May or this one week in June because we're full for the rest of the year. I'm like, seriously?
Well, we have those bow shows to go to.
Yeah.
Idaho and then Pennsylvania and then the high country shoot.
Yeah. Yep. That's right. So we have three more that we'll be hitting
this
year.
And then Michigan?
Year.
Isn't it?
I don't think we're going to be able to hit the Compton shoot. That one is the weekend after the high country shoot. And at some point in time, I got to build bows.
Well, that's what Jake and JV are for too.
Right, right. Yep. That, as they, as their skills increase, then our adventuring will probably increase in proportion. But at this point in time, we've got some catching up to do on our orders from, you know, that have been lagging on catching up. So once we get caught up there, then and get these guys up to speed, then we'll definitely.
Well, it would be a great experience for them to go to the bow shows as well. 100%. It's so great to actually meet the people.
Yep. No
and
doubt.
To be, you know, to hear stories and get to know them. And it's really fun. Australia, it was just incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible experience. That was a really great show. And so many people.
We got so many invites too down there to go hunting.
Yeah. Bring your whole family.
Right. Yep. So we're going to have to plan a stalker adventure down under, you know, in one of these off years that we don't go down for a bow show, maybe burn down there. And
you should share a bit about how much hunting opportunity there is there. I don't know if people really understand that.
Yeah, so I was supposed to have recorded a couple of podcasts while I was down there in Australia. I had them all lined up to do Sunday afternoon after the show. And then I came in and I mean, I couldn't talk, I could squeak and I couldn't even squeak very well. And so obviously the podcast went out the window. So I'm going to be recording a couple of podcasts coming up in the next, you know, couple of weeks here. And so I'll be able to kind of lay it out at, you know, they'll do it much better justice, but I mean, they have, by and large, 365-day season, no bag limit, and you know, a boundless opportunity for a handful of different deer species, buffalo. What are those? I always forget the name of those.
Scrub bulls, yeah, the wild cattle.
Yep, scrub bulls. Tons of pigs up there in the Northern Territories. I went down and then lots, you know, obviously lots of goats and then there's fox and
a bunch of deer species. Yeah, how many deer species?
Dingoes and cats, wild cats. And I mean, and then you get into the weird ones like camels and donkeys,
yeah,
and, you know, all that stuff that are little, maybe a taboo for people, but there's
some part of me that would love to shoot a camel with a bow and arrow. I don't know why.
Yeah. Well, see, all of
almost
those
are wrong, but
invasive species down there too. So, I mean that, you know, they're not indigenous to, Australia, and a lot of these are doing a lot of damage to the habitat down there. And then obviously the predators, the dingo and the feral cats are, you know, hell on the ground nesting birds.
All the small marsupials.
Yep.
They didn't evolve with predators like that.
And
people don't think about how efficient a killing machine a cat is.
Yeah.
But take a leopard, shrink it, same thing.
Yep.
I mean, that's exactly what a feral cat is, and they're just inundated with that stuff.
Yeah, and they're climbing trees and nailing the, you know, nesting birds out of the trees and all that. So it's a little unnerving, I gotta admit myself. I mean, you look at a magazine from Australia and they're holding up a cat and it's like, that looks like my cat, you know, but if you put it in the context,
your cat wouldn't make it a day in the wilds of Australia.
Ours is pretty soft. No doubt about that. But you put it in the context of what kind of damage these, you know, feral animals are doing in a habitat that they weren't, you know, meant to be in really. And, then, you know, maybe it takes it out of, I guess just, you know, for them, it's normal down there. For us, it's still a little bit of a, you know, an issue to get over for some people, but I understand it. It's just, I'm always a little bit cringing, you know, cause it just, I'm always looking at stuff from the perspective of a non-hunter or an anti-hunter when I think about things here in the States. And, so when somebody's holding up a picture of a dead cat, it's like, ooh, that one, I don't know about that, you know?
Yeah. Doesn't seem to, fit in the same mold as the North American model of wildlife management. You know, we can explain most of that to someone who's willing to listen. If they're not so far, you know, anti that their ears just automatically shut when you talk about it. But when you start talking about, you know, shooting feral animals that look like your pet, it's little, gets weird in a hurry.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole issue with the feral you know, wild Mustangs and the donkeys uh-huh. and all that in Nevada and surrounding states.
Yeah, and that's a huge topic.
Something's going to have to happen, you know, but there's the problem is, I mean, there's just so much pushback from the public that I can't imagine how that problem is going to be overcome. But meanwhile, it's going to, you know, it's killing off sheep, you know, habitat, mule deer, winter range, and it's costing taxpayers millions of dollars to board all these animals at BLM, you know, where they have these giant corrals with, you know, animals that are no longer being adopted. And so they're just having to feed them because they, you know, they euthanize them and there's going to be a huge stink. But, you know, it's those same people that are creating the huge stink that they're not opening their wallets to help solve the problem either.
Yeah.
So it's a big dilemma.
It's an issue.
Yep. No doubt. No doubt. So, well, is there anything else that we needed to cover before we sign off for till the next go round?
I don't think so. Maybe with our plan for getting a bunch more content out, I mean, we might ask the listeners if there's anything specific that they would like to see from us.
Yeah, no, that'd be great. You know, reach out to us either through email or social media or whatever and let us know if there's some specific things that you guys would like to know or see more of. That would be that'd be fantastic. We're going to be, you know, starting in on it. JV's getting brushed up on the editing, so as he you know gains more experience. Actually, that's pretty exciting right now. So since hunting season last year, you know, we've had all this footage from the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years that I've been intent on getting this next DVD out. So, Wes, who has done the video work for me in Colorado the last, 4 or 5 years, he's been, working on editing. But, the problem is, you know, he sends it over to me. I'm supposed to create a edit off of his rough edit and, you know, I'll start in on it, not finish, and, you know, things will take priority over it. So I haven't really made any progress myself, but now with JV in the office here and he's working on it and chipping away at it. And already, you know, we've made more progress on it in the last 4 days than I have in the last 4 months. So expect to see that coming down the pipe here pretty soon. We're going to start making a lot more progress on getting that done. And I'm super excited. There's a lot of great footage in there. I'm stressing out right now because I'm missing a one card from a Nevada hunt a handful of years ago. And I think that footage might be lost. And so there's going to be some real gappy spots in that, you know, what would be a full hunt segment. It'll probably end up having to be reduced down to, you know, a really short kind of segment in there, but it'll be, you know, it shows some new country there in Nevada. I hunted a different unit. So, it's exciting to get to see the footage, start to see this project come together. And, I'm going to tell you, if you enjoyed the last one, this one's going to be next level better. Just the people that I had filming for me, you know, we were using better camera gear, a little bit more knowledgeable. You know, not that the people that filmed for me before didn't do a great job. It's just, you know, things are progressing and I knew better kind of what to direct, what we didn't have the last time for support footage and all that. So I'm really excited to get this next one out the door.
I am too.
Yeah.
Because all I've seen of it is looking over your shoulder while you're editing.
So. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be fun. You know, I'm looking forward to, I've got some good music lined up, which actually to me has been the most exciting part. I mean, I really love, when you see somebody put together a good video, and it's got great music to support it, I feel like it brings it from mediocre to next level just with that alone. And I'm really excited. Dave Brinker at Sitka is, he's a singer and a musician, and he's doing some stuff that we're going to utilize on this, DVD as well. So it'd be really fun to, you know, bring him on the project. Last time I had another buddy of mine back from California, he whipped out some scores for me. And so I'll probably hit him up again just for some background music. But yeah, this is going to be fun. It's going to be a great project. And as traditional archery, you know, has been getting more traction the last couple of years, I'm excited for people that are starting to express an interest in it. I think that this will kind of help show them that you can get it done with a stick bow. You know, I mean,
for sure,
it's, you know, you're not going to be dropping bombs at 40 yards necessarily. It's going to be sneaking in close, but you know, you can do it. And it's going to be fun to be able to show people on video that that you can do it. So
for sure.
Yeah. Right on. All right, you guys. Well, I appreciate you guys coming on. And Kyrie, I'm glad that, you know, we had to do some arm twisting, but you don't have any red marks that show from the rug burn.
No, I always say I like to get me outside of my comfort zone.
There you go. Yep. Well, hopefully we'll be able to get you on here more. Listeners, if you liked hearing from somebody else, then let's hear it as well. Give me some feedback there. And then I can show her, hey, look, you know, somebody did like what you had to say. And look, the FedEx truck is coming in the driveway. There's a gift. All right. Well, it's a good time to sign out because there's probably something good on that truck. Thanks for listening, you guys.
Thanks, everybody.
If you've enjoyed listening to the Western Bowhunter podcast, please subscribe to the show so that you will automatically be notified when new episodes are posted up. Please take the time to give us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. This will help us in the podcast rankings and will help us grow. If you have a topic you'd like to hear about or a guest that you'd like to hear from in a future episode, email south@stalkerstickbows.com with podcast in the subject line.
Too many years have passed me by. I come down.